Get ready to pod till you drop, because you're listening to the Trackmate Podcast.
That's right, and we're back.
Hello.
So, after that very quick toilet break.
Oh, was that the toilet break?
It always is. Every hour, give ourselves a few minutes just to recoup, get drinks.
I've got drink, I've got Chinese, so I'm good.
Just so that at no point we have to have a... I'm crawling!
Are we going to bring that up every hour that I'm on?
Yes.
I might be lucky not everybody might have heard that. I might still seem like semi-respectable to some people.
Who?
Jeremiah!
Oh, crap.
Oh dear, and that's like every time that I listen to that, I'm amazed by your amazement. I'm walking.
See what I'm like when I'm on my own.
So that's absolutely brilliant stuff. Okay, so we still have Tom with us, I believe.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi, Tom.
So, Tom, still awake.
When you was calling in, was it initially to do with the Ships of the Line?
It was originally, yes.
Okay, go on then. Throw it at us. What would you say is your favourite ship?
Well, I've got two favourite ships.
Mm-hmm.
It's greedy, but I have two. First
They're
not
one, STO ships, are they?
One of them's the cannon one.
Okay.
Yeah. First up, it's the Intrepid Voyager ship.
I like the Intrepid. I know a lot of people would turn around and have a go at the folding warp nacelles, but they served a purpose.
Yeah, that was so they could go faster than warp 5, wasn't it?
Yeah, so without ripping subspace.
I just thought it was an interesting visual. I really like it.
Yeah, it looked cool. So,
and also they had varying speeds of how quickly it could go up and down. Slowly for when you need it to be nice and cinematic. Fast for an escape feature.
Yeah, then it's the barrel roll escape.
You know, they never got stuck, did they? You never sort of, Captain, we can't go to warp. One of the nacelles is, or like flying in circles, because one nacelle was stuck up and one was down.
Yeah,
they
some
probably lubricating them.
You've got the WD-40.
Yeah.
There's more of that data stuff.
Yeah, he didn't retire. He's being drained.
So, and what would you say is your second ship then, Tom?
It would have to be the Odyssey.
The Odyssey class,
which is the Star Trek Online. Officially Canon Enterprise F, which is now in the chat link if everyone wants to go and see it.
Which I like to refer as the obese E.
It actually is better than the E, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It looks a lot. It's Sovereign class meets Intrepid class.
Yes, and it also separates as well. So,
it's got
source of separation as well.
It's also got the little ship that comes out the bottom, hasn't it? Out of its bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the captain's yacht, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That is.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I don't have that much of a fond spot for it. It just doesn't strike the right notes for me. I would much rather have the Defiant. It's just that much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just that much more whippy and can kick your ass whilst manoeuvring away from your fire. So, but still, that's just me. Everyone's their own. If we all thought the same, it'd be boring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're saying that. I would be tempted to put down one of my favourite ships is the Borg Cube.
That's cheating.
Okay.
Just so intimidating. Just
originally.
Okay. Pre-Voyager. Borg there you cube. Go. Yeah. But saying that, in First Contact...
Tactical cube. Oh, yeah, pre-Voyager.
Yeah, but saying that, First Contact kind of ruined it because it's like all just fire down the exhaust port.
Yeah.
Then it poos out a little sphere.
That's the thing. There's things being thrown out left, right, and centre between Data and the Borg.
Yeah.
So, but no, I always enjoyed in TNG just the presence of it, and the like. Doesn't matter how much you damage it, it's always going to repair itself.
Yeah.
So it did get silly when Voyager could just destroy one by itself.
With one torpedo.
Yeah, definitely. But still, were there any ships that you guys just thought, what the hell were they thinking?
Kazon ships.
I didn't mind the Kazon ships.
Yeah, but Wayne, you like the motion picture. Come on.
No, I hate the Kazon, but I didn't think their ships were awful.
No, what, the flying cows?
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, they should just be getting used for cargo transport.
Yeah.
The Miranda class starships always just looked a little bit too flimsy and floppy, and just like they should be only used for like transporting things.
Actually, I tell you which ship I always had a little soft spot for. The Nebula class. I really like it, and I don't know why.
It's cute. It's got that. I like the little triangular bit at the back.
A little pod. Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems so. It's like a saucer section with personality.
Yeah. It's like a little baby version of the Galaxy class. And that said, I wasn't a fan of the Galaxies, but I really like the Nebula. So.
Yeah, but
Fez would like to speak.
Go on then.
Beverly ship,
the flying microphone.
The flying microphone from Josie and the Pussycats.
The pastel.
The flying ship.
That's probably one of the most ugly ships there is.
I think they were
the Move controller from a PS3.
It does look like a Move controller from a PS3. That's exactly right.
To be honest, it looks like something from Spaceballs, like it's meant to be taking the piss.
I think, well, Beverly was a captain. Isn't that taking the piss in itself?
But it was a medical ship.
It was. Can't fault it, really. One of the strangest classes of ship, and just in the Federation, was the Oberth class. That thing just looked weird.
I love the
Oberth. Yeah, but they were just tiny and ridiculous. I mean, what the bloody hell was it meant to do? It stings people and it's an annoyance, but you know, if you manage to get it, just flick it and it's gone.
So, but saying that, looking at the Nebula class, though, it just looks like someone was a bit of a Star Wars fan and just tried to cross one of the big triangular battleships with the Enterprise D. That's the thing. I just think, I don't know. It's as you said, it's just the baby child of an Enterprise D. It's the bastard child of an Enterprise D at a Star Wars ship.
Oh yeah, baby.
Actually, speaking of the Pasteur, it reminded me far too much of one of the old Daedalus class starships, just with the sphere instead of the saucer.
I'm trying to think which one the Daedalus class was.
It was basically the Pasteur in the original series.
Oh, yeah. I'll see. I'm going to have a look.
This is a photo of this microphone ship. What are you doing?
Oh, Christ. Oh, yeah.
Talking about ships and all that, we all had that moment the first time in All Good Things. When the Future Enterprise came out.
When it decloaked with the three nacelles and the cannon.
Yeah, we all went,
Oh my God.
Oh my Lord.
The Enterprise D Dreadnought with the three nacelles. Yeah.
Yes. I loved
it.
Oh,
yeah.
That is my favorite ship.
That thing was badass.
That was.
Yeah, Daedalus class looks like something out of Button Moon.
Yeah.
That's the Dreadnought D, though, I thought personally was, at the time, it was my favourite ship for quite a while, just because it looks so badass.
Yeah. And it had a cloaking device.
And it had a cloaking device.
Yeah, but the thing is, the cloaking device I can leave, because it never bothered me that much, the cloaking devices, because if everyone had cloaking devices, it would take away so many plot points.
Oh, yeah.
If you could just fly to Kronos without a problem, then where's the fun? Yeah, you want to be getting into some trouble. Oh, dear. So, but saying that, one ship that I did always wonder about, it's for me the Ferengi ships. They always seemed like they should be facing the other way.
Thank you. I've always said that.
it makes more sense to me personally than to have this cruddy little flat thing out in front of you.
Is this the Marauders, yeah?
Yeah.
That's the one. But you know what really trips my mind about those Marauder class starships? For as much Ferengi story as we got in 7 years of DS9, never once did we see one of those ships.
No, no. I suppose
like some sort of seafood.
I suppose someone figured that they were flying the wrong way, so never bothered to use it.
That's why the Ferengi Alliance never got anywhere, because they were going in reverse the whole time.
Reverse.
Yeah, I just thinking that as well.
As soon as I said it, I thought, surprised we didn't all just bust into song. Because we never do that, do we, Pez?
No. Never again after Rick.
After Rick singing it, just putting it so completely to shame.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the legend that is Rick Moyer has taken away any fun that you may have had from singing on podcasts.
We're not doing podcasts anymore.
We're not podcasting anymore.
Oh, dear.
I'm going to go home and play Skyrim.
That's the thing. To be honest, that's not half far from the truth, is it? You're never there. Every time I hear the episode, it's always Skyrim. Skyrim.
What is this Skyrim?
It's going to be the best game of 2012.
And what is it?
You shoot people in knees.
No. You shoot people with knees.
Why not? It's like a Lord of the Ringsy sort of fantasy game where you just sort of run around and do stuff.
Oh, I like it. Is it on the PC?
Yes.
Oh, lovely. Is it free?
No.
No.
Oh.
Well, you just pay once for it.
Oh, okay. And Skyrim, it's called.
It's part of the Elder Scrolls games.
There you go, Paul.
There you go. There's
Elder Scrolls. Marvellous. I can't be getting into anything else. I've got too much to do.
That's right.
So, guys, I think at this point, we have still got another three sections of Larry Nemeshek interview to broadcast throughout the event. And I think it might be a good idea to put one out there. Right now. So talk amongst yourselves whilst I sort this out.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
And
hello.
Morning.
Okay, now say goodbye. Here it is.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, welcome back. We're back here with Larry Nemeshek now. And continuing on from our earlier discussion, Larry, I wanted to ask you, when CBS do decide to bring Star Trek back to our TV screens, would you have any concerns if the series was set in the alternative reality that was created in the film?
Well, I think my preference as a fan who has watched, been around for ages, and I realize that obviously we've got new people. We've got people that have 5 years in on Star Trek, we have people with 10 years and all that. And the J.J. movie affected an awful lot of people. And maybe by the time there's a second and a third movie, we'll have a total of 4 or 6 hours in that universe, you know, depending on when this series comes. Because, frankly, it's going to be ego and politics and social currents and all kinds of things that are going to sway the decision of what to do with that. And, you know, right now, reboots and reimaginings of whatever flavor are really popular in Hollywood, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. The Hawaii Five-0 series redo worked really well. But there's nothing is quite like Star Trek, and nothing is quite like all the Star Trek generations. And I don't know what else there is aside, you know, Doctor Who is great, but we've got the regenerations of the Doctor, and he just kind of follows along with when he interfaces with Earth. We just have Earth kind of going along. I don't know what else there is. And Star Wars made up its own, you know, untraceable timeline. It's internally consistent, you know. I don't know what else is like Star Trek where there is this 700-plus-hour devotion to continuity, and you can't help but be a human being and be involved in that. I know some people are intimidated by it. I think once they finally – you know, the great revolution now of the DVD and Netflix era, and I'm sorry if you guys aren't getting to, you know, wallow in it as much as we are over here, but DS9 has been the huge benefactor of that, and I see that whenever I take my poll at conventions. So – even some of the shows that didn't get as much of an audience the first go-round are investing more people in the prime timeline. So to answer your question, actually try to, I would love for it to be back in the prime. I'm really sad for this meme that the 700-plus hours is, like I said, you know, a few hours ago when we were in our first segment, was that the first that the 700 club, as I call it, is this big weight on the shoulders of writers and producers. And I know if you're coming out of, you know, because your first 9 things you want to do, someone used to say, oh, it's been done already. You have a great idea for some drama, or you find a way to make the perfect humans work, or you're going to interact them with some alien culture or whatever. And you dramatically find a way to do it as a producer, or much less as a creative visualizer, you know, visual effects or costuming or set design or whatever it is. And then you find out, oh, well, they did that on the original series, or, oh, well, they did that on Next Generation. And that's where the 700 hours catches up with you. Or one of the Roddenberry tenets, you know, Michael Piller used to talk about playing in the sandbox, and it was hard. And a lot of good award-winning writers would get chewed up and spit out by the Trek machine because they couldn't learn to write in that sandbox or with Roddenberry's, you know, modern moral. And that's intimidating to people, and I understand that's why they redid the reboot. But I know at the same time there are novelists. The guys that write for pocketbooks, Kevin and Dayton and Mac and all the guys that a lot of them I know, they've got no qualms about coming up with angles and whatever. Now, you have to bring in an audience for a movie especially, but, you know, even so for a TV show, you've got to bring an audience in that's not intimidated that way also, much less existing fans. So it's a tight rope to walk. It always is. But I think creatively there's got to be a way. 20 years ago, not every writer in town or whatever producer was a Trek fan. It was a rare thing. The more we've gone on with Star Trek being on the covers of Newsweek and the, you know, Big Bang Theory being a top 10 show here, the more that geekery and fangirl revolution and the more that pop culture has absorbed Star Trek into the mainstream and people get the references, the more that affects the pool of writers and producers in Hollywood, and the easier it should be for that or to have those people included. So this long-winded way around to say my preference would be to have it in the prime because I think that's what's invested the most, and we were saying a little bit earlier, that's what I think one of the major, you know, tenets of Star Trek is, that it does do that. Now, if you want to jump into the alternate, you know, the JJ's alternate world, if you have enough hours down, maybe that will become compelling. A lot of people say, gee, let's go see what happened on such and such, or let's see, catch up with so-and-so. Maybe so. To me, on just a visceral gut check level, that's like looking for new stories about fake people. The prime universe is how we know things were. It's where we've had most of our time and energy invested in. I understand that it's intimidating to some, but I think there's ways around that, just like there were ways around some of the things, you know, the perfect humans are hard to write for and all that. There were ways around that, and you still don't give up on what Star Trek is for a lot of people. So Yeah, and there have been premises out there. People that have pitched this 75 years in the future, 150, you know, the Federation's had a dark turn, but the setting of our stories will be bringing it back. You know, those are compelling things too. So that's my more than 2 cents.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of the points you made there, Larry. I mean, I would love to see a new series in the Prime Universe, but I'd also kind of, I wouldn't object to seeing one in the new Ultimate Universe we've been given.
Oh, come on.
I know that's absolute heresy for most Star Trek fans to hear that, but if you consider, I mean, a reboot happens once in a while, but a few things. I mean, if you look at the Battlestar Galactica, how that was rebooted, it was done in such a phenomenal way that people were like, when it first happened, you can't do that to a classic show. Then it was done and it worked out beautifully. So I do think that could potentially work for Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek's done so many things over the years. For example, DS9's Space Station, everyone's like, you can't have a show on the Space Station. Voyager, you can't have this show in the Delta Quadrant. I think there's a lot of naysayers. Until it happens, we don't know if it's going to be any good.
Yeah, but Battlestar doesn't have the legacy that Star Trek does.
I was going to say, there were 22 one-hour shows in 1978, 79, you know, 78.
That was phenomenal, though.
Yeah, but...
And it has, you know, and I watched them, too. And I was very sad because I thought the show got good. When they had the Eastern Alliance and they had Count Ebley and some of those shows, those are really going to get wasted the first half of the season. It was Starbuck crash lands on the X planet, you know, on the Nazi planet, on the Roman planet. No, I'm kidding. But that's what all the early shows were. And they got into some good time, but it was, you know, the ship had sailed by then. The ratings were there. They decided it was too expensive. So, yeah, there was not the, there was not a ton of, there weren't 700 hours of TV in 40 years of crazy people that went to conventions and bought all these items for years.
I'll give you that. It's just that I think some shows can be rebooted and work, and I think Star Trek is still so recent in our memories that the Voyager finished in, what was it, 2000? Sorry, Enterprise finished in, what, 2002, was it? Or 2004?
No, it was 2004.
Voyager was 2001.
Yeah.
But no, honestly, though, it's a question of what would they want to do next? They would want to redo Next Gen, and you can't do that.
You don't know that, though, Wayne. It's purely, I mean, if you look at a show where, like Star Trek, it can be retold in so many different ways.
Yep.
Because it's different universes, different stories, you could even throw the same characters in now and again. And as long as it was written in a different manner, it worked.
I was just going to say, it's a question of, they've had like this brilliant reboot, it's made so much money, they're going to do a TV series now. What was the most popular TV series of Star Trek, Next Gen? They would absolutely piss all over it.
Well, there's different angles to this. One thing was, the original series was the first one, and it also had a 20-year head start on everything else. So there's a lot, and there were a lot less episodes.
Yes.
And people all came to that. I mean, I was a rerun baby. I didn't watch it in the 60s. I saw it in the reruns in the 70s. That's where I came into it. So Next Gen went 7 years, was a bona fide hit, had way more people watching it every week than had ever seen the original series in prime time in the 60s or even in the reruns. I mean, people forget that it wasn't just that they did more episodes. Next Generation numerically had more people watching it to this day than the original series does. We've had this whole period of, and we should, we had a whole period of the retro coolness, and that was, kind of the atmosphere that birthed, I think, J.J.'s team into going the direction they did when they were handed a Star Trek reign, now do something. Because, you know, nobody said, oh, go back and reboot Kirk, Spock, and McCoy or reimagine that and find something to hang that on or don't, you know. They just will do the Star Trek movie. So, you know, there's a million choices to go to. And you were talking about the naysayers. People naysayed Next Generation, and Gene was doing it because it wasn't Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. People naysay Enterprise because it's a prequel, not going forward in time. And I'd say, well, it's all in the future, dipshits. It's Star Trek. Shut up. And this is exactly what I wanted to have happen. But I really think just like the people that say, well, the movies, the J.J. movies should all redo each movie. So the second one should be a Khan movie, and the third one should be a Kruge movie, and the fourth one should be a Wales movie. And it's like, well, that's kind of insulting to me, and that's kind of, it's much less creatively crippling. And so to say we're going to reboot all the series now because we can't think to do it. I mean, yes, it was the most popular, but unlike the original series even, it was not the first. It's not... You know, Picard and Data, for all the talk about numbers and affecting people, they're not just the icons of their time, looking back with enough time distance to look back, as Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and, you know, the black and chrome props and the hairstyles on the women and the miniskirts and the boots and all. I mean, you can update that and tweak it to make it a little more realistic, but they're just not the same that way. And maybe I'm saying that because I lived through all of them, and the people that grew up on Next Gen and original series was like the second thing they found, or maybe they refused to go back and look at it because of the cheesy sets and the cheesy effects. And, you know, all those things hit people differently. But I, whatever the reason, I really hope we keep boldly going. Do what Gene did. Gene had the choice when they had a chance to come back to TV, and they went 80 years in the future and honored the original cast by not redoing it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. They could easily redo a new series and get a new audience without having to retell everything by just giving that nearly 100-year gap.
I don't think you'd be retelling anything at all, though. It's purely about story. I mean, Star Trek primarily is a story about people. It's essentially a space soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what century in, you can have the same characters and retell a completely different story. You've got to understand that the new universe has people who have had different life experiences, and they're not quite the same character we're used to. They're a bit more jaded, perhaps. So I think it can be done in a completely different way. I'm not saying they should. I'm just saying if they did it, I would watch it, and I'd be more than happy. I'd be very, very chuffed. I would love it to be in the original universe, but I'll take any Star Trek I can get.
That's a bottom line, and I don't want to be. I was as shocked as I were at the people that weren't going to watch Next Gen because it wasn't Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. I was like, shut up! We're getting weekly Star Trek back. Get in and support it, you know. And like we said, maybe we said this on the other side, as we say on the Trek FM shows, on the other side of the room, we were off mic talking about how maybe it's hard to get through the first episodes of any of the new show. Anytime a show comes out, and Next Gen especially, had a couple of really long, you know, shakedown cruises there on getting up to speed with their episodes. But if any show that goes to reimagine it, it wasn't as much of a headline grabber as it was, and it drove the press, who are they going to cast as Kirk, and who are they going to cast as McCoy, and you know, as much of that is, a big chunk of any reimagining or reboot is going to be focused on not the story or the characters or what you're trying to say or the message. It's going to be about the fact that you're recasting an icon that existed before, a character, you know, and the comparisons to whoever played that character before. That's one, that can be good and that can be bad, but it's obviously something you're going to deal with one way or the other. Versus if you started an original show with original characters in an original setting, for good or for bad, you won't have that layer of production, of casting, of writing, and of, you know, publicity marketing to deal with. So, you know, it's just a given one way or the other, and it's one of the choices you have to take into account. So, you know, that's why I just as soon, I mean, you know, part of what drove the original one, Harv Bennett wanted to do an Academy show for Star Trek V. And one of the things of doing Next Generation, people were saying, let's do an Academy show when they were younger and recast, because the original cast were getting, you know, too old to go out and do an adventure show. We'll solve the problem and have a cadet show here. And it was like, no, let's, you know, those actors are too fresh in people's minds. Let's have new characters. Let's do this route that they wound up taking. And obviously now the decision's made. We've lost Dee and we've lost Jimmy. Obviously it's not too early to recast a show and go a different direction on several fronts. But we're not going to be there for a while with Next Gen, and I think some of that lingers in. But I just would rather see a new Star Trek take on things without having part of the, you know, part of what they have to deal with. There's, for good and bad, the comparison with prior characters and all that.
Brilliant. Well, cheers for that, Larry. And this is going to be our second break, guys. Sorry. So we're going to have to cut away.
Come back later on.
So keep on listening, and Larry will be back with us in a little while. And here we are. After that, second part of Larry Nemechek's interview. That guy really does have just... He's an endless well of knowledge.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So, no, always a pleasure to speak to Larry, and it's I enjoy letting you guys listen in as well. So, we've got two more sections of the Larry Nemechek interview coming up, as well as we've also got a episode review and a couple of never-before-heard episodes of the Improvised Star Trek. So if any of you guys are fans of the Improvised Star Trek, then hang on there, because we'll be able to give you some sneak peeks, as well as the guys will be actually getting together this afternoon and doing a live episode.
Cool.
So that is definitely something to look forward to. You're right there, JD.
Sorry, I'm just fighting with Physics TV.
Why? Are you prepping for First Contact, are you?
Yes.
You still got 20 minutes.
Ah, well, nice to it. That's a Fez problem.
Yeah.
No, I've relegated him to the kitchen while he's cooking the dinner.
Well, what are you having?
Pizza.
Oh.
Paul's almost disappointed that you're not having shrimps on the Barbie.
Oh,
they're not fucking shrimps!
Did you hear that?
prawns, yeah. The technicalities.
We should start a fishing business called Morn's Prawns, and it'd be go gangbusters.
Just calm him down. Give him a Foster's.
I don't think you heard that one.
Oh, probably for the best.
No, you know what? He's sitting in there quietly singing the theme song to Morn in Charge in his head.
As long as in his head, he's also he's getting together the production notes.
Then, yeah, he's doing something. I try not to think about it. Where's this button, Fez? Is it Source?
Bring the fucking remote here.
Shut up! I found it. Sorry, guys. Forgot to mute there.
We are a married couple.
Oh, there it is. Found it. I made it work. Oh, damn! I'm ever so smart. Sorry, guys. Where you go?
No, that's brilliant. that's brilliant. Let's just listen to you discuss Source.
Just shouting at each other from different rooms. This is how every wilderness recording session starts. It's terrible.
You're abusing each other.
Truth be told, if this was how every wilderness recording session started, we'd be sitting here watching a TV show called Collection Intervention. So it's some American show. It's basically hoarders for nerds.
I love it. I haven't seen it. I'm going to have to try and find it online.
I'll find the link for you, mate. It's awesome. These people have these massive collections of just like nerd crap. Like, you've seen Hoarders, yeah?
Yeah.
It's like that, but nerds. It's like one of the guys.
When you're watching it, are you just like, don't get rid of it? Don't listen to them.
Give it to me, I'll have it.
Don't open it.
Exactly. But one of the guys that was on last week's episode, they said his name, and I'm listening to his voice. Turns out it's one of the guys I watch on YouTube. I watch his review of Transformers, like, figures.
Superb.
I'm like, oh, my God.
And now some gits made him get rid of his collection.
That's right. Well, he sold some. He didn't sell all of it. He made, like, $6,000 off the bits that he sold. He had like an original full complete Cat's Lair from Thundercats, like the playset with all its bits, and that went for a small fortune.
Talk about his woman.
I've got to talk about his woman, apparently. I don't even remember her. I was too interested.
How much did she sell for?
Oh,
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Fez would buy that for a dollar.
So I did hear on last week's your sad loss, JD.
Oh yes, it was time.
That's we've all gone through it, I think. With the VHS. The whole collection. Like, that's the thing. It's just not practical to keep an entire room, but it still breaks your heart.
It did. I was looking at them as I was, because I didn't have the heart to actually do it myself. I made my mum do it.
Mm-hmm.
She did it while I was at work, and I was quite heartbroken when I was just looking at some of them in the garage going, yep, they're all going to be gone. I was remembering when I first watched them and just those years. And yeah, but no, I did. For those of you who don't listen to The Wilderness, I did hang on to The Way of the Warrior, surprisingly enough,
mm-hmm.
and Star Trek VI: The Undiscovered Country. Way of the Warrior, because well, everybody knows how I feel about that.
It goes to 11.
It does go to 11. And Star Trek VI, the ex-rental VHS copy of that I've got, is the very first bit of Star Trek merchandise I ever bought in my life. So for prosperity, I had to hang on to that.
I don't know what's worse, though. There's the fact that you spend years and years and years buying all these VHSs. You get the whole collections, which ultimately has cost you thousands and thousands of pounds. You look at a £10 a video and however many videos there are. And then it gets to sort of this day and age, and you look at every single VHS you've got and think, that's worth about a fiver.
At best.
Yeah.
They were about $20 US when I was buying them. US. Where are we? Australia. $20 Australian when I was buying them. And I had every single one.
Yeah. It's a lot of money.
That's a stupid amount of money.
Yeah.
Then I went through and did the same thing with the DVDs. Did not cost me near as much.
I tend to buy them at car boot sales if I can.
The VHS or the DVDs?
DVDs. Well, anything, really.
Well, yeah. Actually, yeah. We had a really big, a local carnival, like a local car boot sale. But I was actually thinking of you guys when I was rummaging through the bags of all the novels. I was thinking about when you got that stack of them for free, and I'm like, I can't top that.
I couldn't believe it. He just had this sheet with loads and loads and loads of books on it, and there were like six Star Trek ones. And I thought, right, it's probably going to go for like 20p each or something. So I picked up five, thinking, well, that'd be a pound. And I left like four on the ground, and I sort of said to him, "Oh, how much for these?" And he went, "Oh, no, you can just have them, mate." And I was like, "Oh, bless you up. Thanks very much. That's lovely." I didn't really want to take the piss and say, "Can I have the other four as well?" Then
yeah. Might have been stretching the friendship. You know, they had like a really good a heap of the old like the DS9 novels, and I thought, "Well, great, I'll grab them all." They're all ones that I already had or didn't want, so I just left them there.
Yeah. See, I've got loads of them, and I haven't read any of them. Well, I've read one or two of them years ago, but I just don't find that I have the time to sit down and read. I'd love to. I might retire.
You might retire. Probably an idea. Now, see, this is why I like getting the bus to and from work. It's basically 20 minutes, half hour of my morning, where I can just sit and quietly read without having to worry about customers swinging a hammer or kids.
I can't read while in a car or a bus or anything. I'll be sick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't do it. I don't know what it is, which is why I've got a load of audiobooks. I brought off eBay a Star Trek audiobook collection, and it was like two CDs, about 20, 30 audiobooks on there, so I'm working my way through those slowly.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
John Delancey reads Q in Q-squared.
John Delancey reads Q-squared, apparently.
Yeah. I think I might have listened to that one. I think that's one of the ones I listened to. Is that when everything seems to be going wrong?
Yeah, everything's the alternate realities and Trelane's in it and whatever else.
Yes. That was interesting.
I thought that could have worked as a Q movie, you know.
Written by Peter David.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because I was listening to it in segments and maybe didn't remember quite what had happened before I listened to it again. But some of it was really surreal. It was like all of a sudden they were on this train and there were people trying to grab them and then Data blew up and Picard was doing something else, and then there was this light and maybe I've been reading.
I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've read it, but I just think like the overall concept of the story, like with the multiple strands of reality, I think could have been a really interesting film, at least better than.
It just seems to keep falling through layer after layer after layer. It was. Yeah. I see what you mean. I think it could be a good film. Could be,
but it probably won't happen. Yeah.
No, very much doubt it. And it would have to be jumped off. Nobody else could try and pull off the Q thing. It's just not right.
No. I would have much preferred that to like either Insurrection or Nemesis. Or his
appearance on DS9.
Or his appearance on DS9.
Yeah. 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 Sisko hit him.
Sisko did hit him. Picard never hit him.
You hit me!
Which probably explains why you only saw him once or twice on DS9.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I done it again. I've been talking away and I had myself on mute.
No, I put you the message saying, Wayne, are you on mute again? Or say something, but then I thought you might just be listening intently.
Yeah, I was listening, but then also I started to interject and I was like, they're ignoring me again.
Okay, what did you want to say, Wayne? Have you bit, go.
No, I was just going to say...
you. It's okay, go.
Fez, you have won the Riker plate.
You should see the smile of it.
Excellent.
So, you can put it up next to your white mask, and you can enjoy it in its full glory.
Oh dear.
No, we'll do a wilderness art project for our next random tangent pod.
Well, thank you for donating.
What did you think of that, by the way?
Sorry?
Our random tangent pod about the Worf show.
Wait, I'm just trying to think. How long ago was this episode?
About 3 days. The special... You probably haven't heard it yet. The special tangent one that we put up talking about the Worf spinoff.
I've not listened to any podcast for about 3 days just because I've been solidly sorting this stuff out.
Unplug. Fez is done. He's out.
Oh, come on. I listen to you guys every day on release and you never answer my emails. So,
well, are we not going down this road again, are we?
Fez clearly does not listen to any Trekmate podcasts.
He barely listens to our podcast.
He's got plenty of time for Smodcast. That's it. Kevin Smith's podcast. Very funny network, Paul.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that'll do.
I've got a proposal for you.
Go on, then.
For one of our random tangent podcasts, after WrestleMania, we and JD are going to do a podcast dissecting WrestleMania. We're going to say, do you want to join us?
Definitely. I'm up for that. Definitely. That would be great fun.
Actually, when are you coming on the Wilderness, Wayne?
I'm sure we can sort it out at some point soon.
You've not been on yet.
Uncomfortable
style. I was on episode 2.
Oh, not a proper one where we do all our random shit.
Yeah, okay then. Well, don't give drink water no hassle, will you? No. Okay.
They haven't invited me.
If the time differences weren't so impractical, I would totally do a drunken Brace for Impact with you, Paul. It sounds like so much fun.
Oh god, yes. I'd actually lift my
nose. It means that one of us would have to be pissed in the morning. And that's wrong.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, I do have lines that need to be drawn somewhere.
Cool. I have no doubt that you could do it.
I probably could. I'll tell you what I could do. I could just get absolutely bladdered one night and then wake up and still be drunk.
Yeah, that could work.
If you just set your alarm to wake up every hour or something just to down some more shots.
Oh, no, I'm not very good like that.
Just to keep it in your system.
That's what happened with the drunk pod, because I was drunk and I was fine and then I fell asleep for an hour and I woke up and I was more or less paralytic.
Yeah.
Were you crawling?
Look, man,
I don't think I could have crawled if I wanted to.
I feel your pain. I've fallen asleep during a podcast before.
Yeah.
So I feel your pain.
That was shocking.
One of them I remember Wayne going, right, hello, and welcome to Trekmate. And then the next thing I remember is waking up and Skype not being on.
No, me and Mark was just like, oh, Christ.
I am sorry. I try.
And that's probably, if we was ever going to get a Paul t-shirt done, it would just be, I'm sorry.
No, another back to be letters, Jeremiah!
I don't know who Jeremiah is.
He's a bullfrog.
I don't know, but you're the one that calls out to him when you're drunk.
Well, I don't bloody. I reckon. I'm hoping this isn't some sort of suppressed memory. You know, all of a sudden on one podcast, I'm going to scream and then just start sobbing uncontrollably.
Well, are you going to watch Threshold, are you?
Ooh.
Are you going to watch Threshold and scream and cry? Because it's that bad.
Is it a scary film?
No.
Oh, it's a really episode. Bad episode.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes.
So it's a Voyager.
Me talking about the Star Trek.
You and Finn should really do a pod together.
Kirk.
Who's the guy with the ears? Who uses the Force? Where's
the lightsabers? Where are the Ewoks?
Oh, they were fairies.
Sorry, where you go?
Ewoks, big overgrown tribbles.
That's them. Yeah, no, tribbles are Ewok eggs.
When do they turn into gargoyles?
Hey, what's this Klingon thing? It looks like someone shaved a Wookiee.
Oh, dear. So, before we digress too much on too many tangents, it's probably a good time to remind guys that we're trying to raise as much money as we can for charity, so please make sure that if you have got any spare change, go to justgiving.com/teams/trekmatepodathon.
Yes, and give us your money, because Mark's not here. Give us your money.
Yeah. Give us money.
Give us as much as you can.
But this time when
are we going to auction off the computer?
Tablet that you've got.
Yeah, the tablet PC.
We'll be sorting that out soon. Let's wait for a few more people to wake up.
Wake up, everybody!
Because we've got some good stuff going on. Whoever donates the most will receive a brand new iPad. And then also we'll be auctioning off two silver Star Trek London tickets worth £225 each.
And a
now,
night
quick question me. About that.
Yes.
If I win that, will you pay for me to fly over?
I could probably afford to maybe send you a paddle. So you had,
need a bike.
Or a ticket to the bus stop for the airport.
Yeah, I could probably... You'll have to provide your own canoe. But I can get you halfway there.
Actually, I've made a decision. Work notwithstanding, if they're doing it again next year, I'm going to make the pilgrimage.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. Because by what they're... After speaking to them like on the phone and everything, they've got some special stuff lined up, and they really are trying to take on Vegas.
Oh, yeah, wow.
They're not all out just declaring war, but they're trying to very much create a bigger event than you would get in Vegas. So I can't wait to see what's going on there. So remember, you've got that auction going on. Also, we will be... we'll be doing that. I think it's about 4. I scheduled that in for. Let me check. No, 3:00. 3:00 British Standard Time. We'll be auctioning them off. So, remember, if you just go buy them anyway, get them for maybe a few quid cheaper and help out charity. So, everyone's a winner.
That's the truth.
Yep, and we've got plenty more prizes to give away. Sorry?
He beat me to it. Quoting hot chocolate.
Yep.
Oh, I hate you.
You got to be quick when I'm on the ball.
So, now that we're halfway there, that's it. We're halfway there, guys.
Oh, wow.
In a few minutes, it's going to be 12 hours done. So that was a bit of a surprise. Now, this next song, Fez, is just for you. Here it is. There you go.
Riker to Captain McClark.
Go ahead.
Have you approved the transfer of a new officer to the Enterprise?
Negative.
But we've got one waiting to beam aboard. Complete orders. Ensign Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Wellington?
The very same.
Ooh, my little wrinkled nose. Wrinkled nose. When you gonna go back to jail, Bajoran? Ooh, you beam on down. You beam on down. Explain it all to the Captain Bajoran. Never gonna stop. Give it up. Such a snarky tune. Headband with the hair so short. Always in an awful mood. My. Woo! My Bajoran. Your first name is the last, is the last. When you gonna give me a smile, Bajoran? Oh, you're just an ensign hunt on a Starfleet mission. Oh, wearing, oh, they let you out for a bit. That's the plan. Admiral got you setting up for the Cardassian. My Bajoran. My Bajoran.
Can you point us at the right individual that Mr. Data suggested?
I would go to the camp on the southern continent of Valor 2. Find a man named Keith Falor. He has no diplomatic experience. And he won't ask me to dance. I think you're a small man who feels a rush of power in his belly and enjoys it far too much.
This is the Bajoran. We claim responsibility for the destruction of the Federation colony on Solarian 4. As long as we are without our homeland, no one will be safe in this sector.
Ensign Rhode Island.
You will follow Starfleet uniform code aboard this shipment.
What? Hello. It's me, Guy. Look, I got myself into this. I'm just trying to figure a way out, that's all.
about anyone getting killed this time.